order our April 3rd meeting of Health, Human Services, and Human Rights. And I'll begin by entertaining a motion to adopt or to approve the March 6th meeting minutes.
So moved.
All right, moved by Legislator Kitchen and seconded by Legislator Harmon. Any discussion on the minutes? All right, then I'll call the question. All those in favor of approving the March 6th minutes? Any opposed? So we'll get right into resolutions. The first is Resolution 145, amending the 2025 Ulster County budget to fund a medical examiner forensic pathologist position, amending the 2025 Ulster County position listing through the Department of Health. And we'll start with Director Walter to give us a quick walkthrough of the situation.
Thank you. So just as for history for any legislator who doesn't know it, we've been contracting with Westchester or Health Alliance or Kingston Hospital, depending on the name, depending on how many years back, for a very, very long time, decades, where they hired the forensic pathologist. So even though this is, says it's new, it's not new. We've been just contracting with them for this forensic pathologist. So what we're looking to do is to actually in-house this forensic pathologist directly with us. This has several benefits. One is kind of an efficiency benefit because this forensic pathologist can also serve as a chief medical examiner. So we wouldn't need both positions. We'd only needed that one chief medical examiner who also is a forensic pathologist. This will also make us a legitimate medical examiner's office because currently our chief medical examiner cannot do forensic pathology. So in some ways they are more like a coroner where they can just observe, but they can't actually do true cause of death. So this would make us really, it's more solid. Moving this person from the hospital to us is also very important in terms of improving the administrative capacity because they'd be working with the deputy medical examiners. This person will be in charge of the entire division and they would be a part of our team. This person, this bringing him to us is also important because our current chief medical examiner is not able to attend scenes. And should we have a high profile scene or a mass casualty, we would need our chief to be the face who's there, who's present, who might be speaking to law enforcement or public. So this will allow us to have that. And then the last is kind of an illegal side that sometimes these cases, a family may perceive, right or wrong, that it's the fault of the hospital, the cause of death. And we've had other counties where the pathologists work for the hospital, and then the family is questioning that they're saying it's not the hospital who's caused it, and that this is an employee of the hospital, and it sort of seems to feel like questionable. So having this as a Department of Health, Ulster County person creates that neutrality that allows them to, freeze them of that connection with the hospital itself. No extra cost because, again, we're not changing what we're paying this pathologist. We're just bringing it in-house.
Any questions from anybody? Yes, Legislator
Nolan. Thank you. It sounds like a good plan, but I want to just ask for clarification because I didn't look at any supporting materials on this. So when we were previously paying this person, we would be paying that person as a consultant, not as a member of staff.
We were paying Westchester, who paid her.
Right. So by bringing this in-house, will we now be this be a benefited position? And is the total amount then the same, or will it be the same salary, but now we'll be picking up benefits?
We were paying Westchester her base and benefits.
Okay.
So now it's the apples to apples.
Great. When that comes up in Ways and Means, I will now know the answer. Thank you.
Just in case, Seth, I will say that the benefits of Westchester are just slightly better.
Uh-huh.
So we made the smallest adjustment. It ends up netting exactly to zero. Like, there's no difference, but what we did is since our benefits were a little lower, we upped it. And we're talking like $1,000 or $2,000, but just so that she did not see a shift in what she was bringing, including basin benefits.
Okay. Thank you.
Was that like a result of the insurance premium or something?
Donated more towards her retirement than elsewhere. And again, it really comes to a very small amount, but I didn't want it to feel like it's any more to come to us.
Any other questions or discussion? I'll just mention, you know, Director Walter shared this with me as it was, you know, being submitted, and I fully support the reasoning behind it, and I think it's the right move for sure. And in general, I tend to support bringing things in-house overall.
Can I just add one more thing?
Sure.
Just in case it comes other ways and means, several of you know this, there are about 450 forensic pathologists in the whole country. There are other counties that are struggling to find one. We're very lucky that we have one who really wants to come work with us, but I just want you to know there are very few of these people, which probably speaks to why their salaries are so high, but this is a rare breed.
Commissioner Collins.
We'd also mention that the hospital that there is transferring other employees to us. We're not stealing someone from them. They're okay with the transfer.
They're happy with it.
Which I'm sure there are some around among us that might enjoy the thought of stealing an employee from John. But I understand that that's not the particular win here. Yep.
Sorry, I just want to add, we'll still have a contract with the hospital, which covers deliverables depending on their rated things. So for each autopsy, there will be labs, there will be a lab tech. But it's based on how many autopsies. So that part of the contract will stay consistent. We don't know exactly how much it is each time, but that's part of the agreement. So in case anyone's looking carefully in ways and means, just to point out, those will stay the same. You can still use their morgue for their lab tech somewhere, and they will still do the lab. But it's per case as opposed to a case.
Anyone else? All right. Legislator Lopez, I know you're just coming in to the conversation, but if you have any questions about the forensic pathologist, we just had, that was the conversation that we were having. All right, cool. So if there's no other questions, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 145, moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor? Any opposed?
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you want to vote on Legislator Lopez to report a vote on the minutes?
Oh, do you want to report a vote on the minutes?
Yeah.
Sure. Great. Perfect. So I'm starting out a vote in the affirmative on the minutes. Resolution 146, confirming reappointments of Dr. Maya Hambright, Emma Hambright, and Maureen Sheehan to the Community Services Board. Let's see, which does this go through? Which department does this go through? Not McDonald. Okay, great. Commissioner McDonald, do you want to say anything about these appointments?
No, just that they have been really strident members of our Community Services Board and moving us in a really great direction, and I'm hoping we're able to reappoint them.
Any questions from the committee? If there are no other questions, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 146. Moved by Legislator Corcoran, I saw a hand, and seconded by Legislator Collins. I'm trying to spread it around here. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right, that's 146. Resolution 147, approving execution of a contract amendment for $10,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered by the county with Family Services, Inc., through the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, want to give us a little background?
Sure. This money actually traditionally was going through the Department of Health for we do biannual youth surveys. We're moving the money from Department of Health, and we are using it for Ulster Prevention Council to do continue the surveys, but on the years that we're not doing the surveys, to market their prevention services.
We should probably have the Ulster Prevention Council back here for a little presentation. We did that a couple of years ago, I think, maybe in an upcoming meeting. Just as a side note. So any questions from the committee?
Nope.
All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 147.
So move it.
Moved by Legislator Collins.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That's 147. Moving on to Resolution 148, approving execution of a contract amendment for $97,122 entered into by the county with Gateway Community Industries, doing business as Gateway Hudson Valley, to the Department of Mental Health and the Commissioner McDonald.
So this is additional funding that Gateway is getting through the office, New York State Office of Mental Health, specifically for their PROS, personal recovery, personalized recovery-oriented services program, and to supported housing. It's a great thing because the state is recognizing that it's very difficult to provide supportive housing departments and because of the rising costs, so they are adjusting the rates and so that they can we can support this program. So we're really happy and ready to accept these dollars.
Any questions from the committee
or other legislators?
So if it's increasing the rate, my understanding is that would not necessarily increase the amount of people that can be served, but makes it easier to serve those people because you have more housing options?
It makes it easier for the agency in order to be able to provide the service. So it doesn't, right now, before the increase, it wasn't covering their costs. The supportive housing comes with a person has to pay 30% of their rent, and then the lease is in their name. But it also has to have a case manager that's attached to it, and any damages that happen. So it wasn't covering their costs. This is the state saying we're trying to right-size you so that it makes it better for them to actually provide the service.
Okay. Is there any other questions, discussion? If not, then I will call the question, or not call the question, I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 148. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 149, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $4,096, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county with Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue Campus, Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner Rosales?
This is also a small cost adjustment for specific to crisis intervention services that happened in the emergency room.
All right. Any questions from the committee?
Yeah, the voting sheets aren't getting back to us.
What's that? The sign machines? Okay, well, we'll get it sorted out. I'll entertain a motion to adopt 149. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 150, Resolution 150, amending the 2025 Ulster County budget for 2024 rollover expenses through the Department of Social Services. And Commissioner Iannapoce, do you want to give us the background here?
This is about as simple and straightforward as social services resolutions get. We have two programs through OTDA. One is a rental supplement program that we're asking to roll over 202.432.63, and one is the family-centered case management services where we're asking to roll over 330.769. Both of these allocations were arrived at close to the end of 2024 and announced by OTDA. So the time that we required in order to find service providers and enter into contract with them, that being accomplished near the end of the year, we didn't end up extending these allocations. And we're just simply asking to roll them over from 24 to 25.
All right. Any questions from any legislators? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 150.
I'm over that.
Moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator Corcoran, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 151, amending the 2025 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to implement services under the Raise the Age Act plan for, SFY, that's what, state fiscal year, right? State fiscal year 2025. The Department of Social Services and Commissioner Iannapoce.
Thank you. I'm going to hand off to Deputy Commissioner Rita Wood.
This is 100% funded by the state. It's Raise the Age, so it's to help prevent criminal activity for adolescents and older youth. We submit a plan every year, and based on that plan, we get allocated money in. this the amount that we were allocated this year. And we do a lot of preventive services. There's a small portion should children have to go into detention, but for the most part, 100% of it is used for MST services, which is multi-systemic therapy services with family therapy, family house respite for adolescents, along with the DASH program, which is done through Family Woodstock. And DASH is called Developing Adolescent and Social Harmonies, and we do a lot of that at the Restorative Justice Center, groups, individual sessions, things, conflict resolution, it may be a mediation, maybe one of our adolescents vandalized my house, and it's myself as the homeowner and the adolescent to get together with Family Woodstock and do a mediation or some type of resolution to restore damages or repair damages, things like that. Great. And that's what it's for. It's 40 here at DSS that will really monitor that program and do the staff to it. We work with probation and mental health services.
Any questions, discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 151. Moved by Legislator Lopez, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 152, amending the 2025 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of Child Abuse or Neglect Prevention and Treatment Act, CAPTA, Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act of 2016, CARA, funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, the Department of Social Services, and Commissioner Iacozzi or Deputy Commissioner, whoever would like to.
So since 2016, oh my gosh, it's almost 10 years, we receive money through the state for we use it for behavioral specialists. We contract with four child protective services to help families access, mostly parents, access mental health and substance use services so that their kids can be maintained at home for it. And we contract out with right now with Nick Hammond. He's been doing it for 3 years now, and he works about 30 hours a week with us, goes out with caseworkers, goes out to families' homes, and we'll make phone calls with parents and go to referrals and all that stuff for those services that they would need based on what the allegations may be reported to us or what the family court orders are. And last year, it was increased to $90,000, and it stayed at $90,000 this year, and it looks like from my sources at the state, it will continue to be at $90,000. So,
all right, cool. Any questions from legislators? Okay, then I will entertain a motion to adopt 152, moved by Legislator Corcoran, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 153, amending the 2025 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of adoption and legal guardianship incentive funds for recruitment activities from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, the Department of Social Services, and Commissioner Iacozzi or Deputy Commissioner Wood.
So this is brand new. We just got notice of it early this year, even though it says October 24. The federal government wants the states to have at least 50% or more of children in foster care in kinship or relative kin homes. So this is given out to each of the counties to try and promote that and try and sustain that. So what we found and what we reported back to the state is when kids come into foster care on an emergency basis, a lot of our relatives or fictive kins aren't prepared. They have no bassinets. They have no extra beds. They have no fire alarms, things that are required. So we can use this money for that. We can also use this money to recruit foster parents / adoptive parents for different ages. So right now we're just asking you to extend, and then we're going to come up with a plan of how to spend that money between now and September.
Okay. Not a very long window of time.
Mm-hmm.
Not a long window of time.
No. Yeah, I mean, I think they announced it in February when they gave it to us. Yeah.
By September, the deadline.
I think it might have to go with whatever their budget year is, and because it's like given to the state, and the state has given it to all the counties. So
interesting.
And nobody's given me a reason.
Okay, fair enough. Yep, Legislator Harmon.
Thank you, Chair. So this was
given out in February. This is a first time program?
This is the first time they've given money towards.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when was the decision to give the money made?
I don't know. We got a email with an ADM attached to it in February saying you're awarded $25,000 to provide hiring, recruitment services. You know, they're saying we can hire professional photographers for events. We can use the money to, like I said, buy things for families, which we've done locally on our local share. You need a bunk bed to fit two of your nieces. We're going to go out and buy it. Now they're saying we can fill the state back and get our money back for that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Other things is, so when kinship foster care, you can go on adoptive route if they can't return the parents, or you can go through what they call KINGAP or kinship guardianship, and these monies can help reduce our costs when we're helping those families with adoptive services or paying an attorney to help them go through the process. So we can use that too. Information we got never said what will happen if we don't spend it. We have to bill by the end of October all our expenses. And we're working really hard to look at what we can do because I know contracts are hard, you know, so the contract for certain events, it has to go through the process. It might not work out where we'll spend any of it, but I'm hoping we spend enough of it and all the counties spend enough of it that they would do it again next year.
Yep, thank you. That's what I'm just trying to get a sense of, like, anytime I hear of recent funding, I want to track it back and have some sense of stable it might be.
Yeah, we were surprised by it. There's some collateral dynamics around funds for kinship guardianships. Yes, some of the collateral benefits are that children, the data shows that going to kinship guardianship achieve permanency sooner and sustained permanency. So that's an overall overarching goal.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have relative or kinship guardianship, it overall will result in outcomes that are also less expensive. They're better in terms of achieving permanency, sustaining permanency, and they're less costly. Because the sooner that a child can arrive at permanency and remain in permanency, you know, the better off. So it really is, was welcome.
Yeah.
The welcome email among many other emails that maybe are not as necessarily welcome. Yeah. So we'll figure out how to get, you know, this spent in a productive way. If we will.
Great. Cool. Any other questions? Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. All right, if there's no further discussion, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 153. Moved by Legislator Harmon. Seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
All right.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 154, approving the execution of a contract for $200,000 entered by the county with Industrial Medicine Associates, PC, Department of Social Services, and Commissioner Iposi, or Commissioner Wood, whoever.
This is one that's primarily targeted for temporary assistance clients. We go on screening, they're identified as having substance use disorder. So it's verified that all substance abuse counselor services that are provided by IMA result in those clients being screened by IMA, and that assists us in determining what levels of treatment that are going to be required and what kind.
And how it impacts their temporary assistance. Do they have to work so many hours? Maybe with a substance use disorder will give them, you know, say no, to say no. Right now they need substance use treatment first, and then the hours for that. We used to have a KSAC, and when she retired. Basically, the state at that time also was saying have somebody neutral, and so we contracted with IMA as one of the vendors for that. So,
okay. Any questions?
Referrals and responses that seems.
Any questions from any legislators? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 154, moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Our last resolution, Resolution 155, requiring high-quality field drug test kits for use in any required screening of participants of county-administered social service programs. And this was submitted by, introduced by Legislator McCullough. So, Legislator McCullough, I'll give you the floor.
I just want to say that I'm always want to protect people, and us too. I put this resolution in because I talked to people and they had concerns about drug court, and a lot of people are afraid that, you know, sometimes they may get a test that they may fail. That's not so. Even COVID had false positives. So I'm just asking them to use the best test available to make sure we get the true outcome for people's lives at stake. So let's protect them on the front end, then to put people away or whatever the consequences are, and they have to deal with repercussions or possible lawsuits or whatever on the back end. Let's protect people.
So I'm curious, I have some questions, but I'd also be happy to go to, I'd love to hear from Commissioner Ibusi if this, I mean, this is kind of something that you guys encounter as well.
Yes, yeah. We do, Chair, and definitely agree with everything that Legislator McCullough just stated around, you know, the importance that we're testing materials and procedures and vendors are arriving at accurate results, because there is a lot at stake with respect to the results of the test. So we did review the resolution, and just a couple of points for context. We at Social Services do not conduct drug tests in the field. And when I say the field, I mean outside of our office locations, so that there wouldn't be an occasion where we would be somewhere in the community at some location. We do on occasion conduct tests at our offices at Development Court and at Trudy Resnick, and we use the tests that the county contracts for through the vendor.
It's Premier Biotech is the vendor that we buy our testing materials from. And then if we test them and there's discrepancies, like maybe they come in and you're required to have a drug test because we have the court before visitation, and they test positive for something, there's a whole, I think there's like 12 things, 10 or 12 things that are tested in this one trip. I may, as a parent, say that's false, that's inaccurate. We mail it out then to MedTox, which is another county vetted vendor, and MedTox will, within a week or two, send us back a report as to what the final amount, you know, final decision is on that piece of it.
And then IMA is our vendor in the last resolution that administers tests for clients as well in connection with making decisions about what they have to be doing to be in compliance with their eligibility. You know, the reality is that the occasions upon which we might randomly test someone might be if someone arrives at our offices for a supervised visitation and appears to be in care. And we certainly want to be cautious and careful about making sure that there's not engagement during a supervised visitation, you know, where the adult is not able to be conducting him or herself in an appropriate way. But as Legislator McCullough pointed out, you know, the consequences of a test result that's positive, which could result in us deciding not to proceed with a scheduled supervised visitation, is something that we take, you know, very seriously. And, you know, a positive result based on observations around impairment is something that we will all be involved in making decisions. But, you know, I want to be candid about, you know, that's a real life scenario. And depending upon what the reasons are, there are going to be conversations that will involve upper level supervisors ultimately. So a positive test might not always result in the cancellation of a supervised visitation. It'll be something that will inform that decision based on what the individual is reporting to us about other activities they may have been involved in. But, you know, we do with, you know, great regard for the importance of these results, you know, take this responsibility very serious. And this is, you know, how these tests are arrived at being administered and then how the results are evaluated.
I mean, if they test, so a lot of times it might also be based on allegations. We're doing an investigation. And if they test positive for something that they have a prescription for, then it's a different decision than if they test positive for things that they don't have prescriptions for or illegal substances. It may be that they're impaired or testing positive, but they're not to the point of an impairment, and they have the ability to still care for their children. I'm not going to necessarily call a meeting together to discuss having an emergency removal. That being said, we do have occasions where they are to the point where they're impaired, and we would have to go to family court asking for a removal. If it's ongoing preventive or foster care case where they need drug testing, sometimes we'll pull them, have them come in randomly for that, but for the most part, we can also send them to, we have contracts with like Step One and Bridgeback, or I want to say Bridgeback, but they're not there, other places throughout the county that they can go and get tests done, and then those agencies will report back to us. So they're not always pulled in to either building for that.
So I've got Legislator Kitchen followed by Lopez and Herman.
Is there other circumstances where you would do drug testing, or just this one in particular you were just previously discussing?
For us in Children's Services, it's only based on the allegations that are made in a CPS report or a family court order.
I understand. Thank you.
Is there any indication that the test you're using aren't that good?
No. No, I mean, so we had an experience, and an alarming volume.
So what would be the difference between the ones that we're using now and a high quality, you know, a field drug test?
So now it's one of the ones that has the most amount of things we could test for, and they're sealed or, you know, pharmaceutical. It's one of the few that is on our county vendor list, I should say. You know, we don't. I haven't gone out and said to the county, can we now contract with this agency? It's people that have been recognized, vendors that have been recognized, county has been used for it. Like I said, we use this particular testing material because of the amount that we can test in one setting.
Right, yeah, I still don't understand the difference between what we have in high quality. You know what I mean? Is there a test out there that, you know, has less false positive or negative, say?
We couldn't really answer that well. So the line on the cross-channel, you know, vendor form.
So I am fine to take Legislator McCullough out of order if you want to answer that specific question.
I just want to say that with technology, things are always changing. If the tests are good now, don't mean they can't be better a month from now, 6 months, or a year from now. When that time comes, we need to use the best test available. That's the point of this
resolution. Okay. All right. So I've got Legislator Harmon next, followed by Nolan.
Thank you. I was just wondering if we have any data on the percentage of the time when that first test is done and somebody says, no, that's wrong, and it goes to the second tester, how many times does that come back and disagree with the original
result? I can check on that. I don't know if it's case specific, but I can check and see if we have some way of getting that data. We may have a log or something, I just don't know.
That feels like it would be a clear case with numbers that we can follow attached to know what we're looking at. It wouldn't tell us the whole story, but...
And I can say that we haven't gathered data that would be able to answer that question, but we also haven't had the volume of incidents that would have challenged us to do that due diligence. So,
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I think that
what I hear is that the agency feels that it's already compliant with this policy and that the policy is not problematic because it would always be your goal to be using highest quality. I suspect that the answer to Legislator Lopez's question is that this is the situation across the board in medicine when you do screening that is intended to be on site and a rapid result, which benefits all of those people who pass that screen and have negatives across the board. So by having that test in the office, let's call it, you allow for people to demonstrate that they have not had those exposures. When you have a positive, this field strip test is never going to be your gold standard. That's why these samples then get sent in. And anytime that happens, the person is going to go, well, why didn't you use the best test in the first place? But the best test has to be sent somewhere else and takes a period of time, hours to days, before you get the result. And so if you use that test, which you might think of as the best test, in all the cases, you wouldn't be able to allow the same access to people as you do by using the screening test. So the questions about false positives and false negatives are important. And in this case, you would want to basically not have too many false positives because you'll be keeping people away. And that's where the number of times that this happens becomes relevant. So looking up and getting some figures on that might be good. But if it's only once or twice a year, then you're probably doing the entire population of people a good by having this. And actually, probably should have Dr. Walter speak on that point, because it's been a while since I've been using those tests or even thinking about false positive, false negatives, and then your follow-up screening. But that's my understanding of it.
So my thinking is that this would apply to, like, if we were doing field tests and there was a choice of products for field tests that all match that, like, immediate response field test, like, criteria, then this would compel us and any vendors that we work with to always go with, like, whatever would be the most notably accurate one. I would be uncomfortable if this law was meant to be interpreted as saying you can't do field tests. Right, and you can only do the, like, lab return tests. Is that the intention isn't to, like, stop doing field tests, right? It's just to use the highest quality field test.
Yeah,
go ahead.
If I could just follow up, there's, when you say the most accurate, there's an art in addition to science about what you're deciding is accurate, because as you increase sensitivity, you decrease specificity. So as you rule out false negatives, you may get more false positives. So the clinic has to decide which is more problematic and which product gives you the best balance, maybe, between those things. So I just, the idea that there's a scale of, like, 1 to 10, and you can get a product that's a 10, it's not that simple. So there is a judgment that has to be made.
So actually, I want to, if Legislator Walter was mentioned, we'll go to her, and then we'll, sorry, Director Walter.
It took me a few months to get there.
We'll go to Director Walter, and then we'll go to Legislator McCollum.
I mean, I would agree, like, obviously, and don't have to get into what sensitivity and specificity, I think I was explained, it is a true point that the verifiable tests are always going, the strongest tests are always going to take a much longer time and have to be sent out to a lab, and that sounds like a delayed process. But I just say it probably, most of these products come with literature on their sensitivity and specificity, so you can actually identify for that product, I'm sure, even on their website, and possibly bring back. They have to have that information, so you'll be able to say how often a false positive happens and how often a false negative in tests that they've done. And then maybe that might help feel more comfortable with what you're currently using.
Any other discussion? Yep, sorry, Legislator McCullough, go ahead.
I'm not only concerned about the false positives. Like she said, she has a test that is 12 different things that can be tested. That's a big part of what I'm thinking. The more things you can test for, the less likely you'll have a false positive, in my opinion.
So it sounds like there's an interest in some more information about the tests, and if we've had instances of field tests that then have a divergent result when they're sent to the lab, So, Legislator McCullough, would you be open to us postponing a month to gather that information? And Commissioner Iaposi, would you help us gather that information?
Okay.
Great. So I would entertain a motion to postpone.
Motion to postpone.
Legislator Collins, motion to postpone. Second. Legislator Harmon, second. All those in favor of the postponement 1 month?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Great. Thank you all. That is our last resolution. No new business, no old business. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Legislator Kitchen. Seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you all.